Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we're taking you to Middle Earth, more specifically to a place that many only know from a single scene, but which has so much more history. Bree.
Bree, the little village where Frodo and the hobbits meet Aragorn at the Prancing Pony. For most people, it's just a brief stop in a story, but there's actually so much more to it.
Yet Bree sits at one of the most important crossroads in all of Middle Earth. That often gets overlooked.
The intersection of two major travel routes. The Great East Road, which ran from the Grey Havens through the Shire all the way to Rivendell, meets there with the Greenway, also called the North Road, which led from Fornost in the north down to Tharbad. Imagine it like, how should I put it, a sort of medieval highway junction.
That's a good way to put it. And yet, hardly anyone knows the backstory of Bree. Compared to Gondor, Rohan or the Shire, it's completely underrepresented.
Which is because Tolkien never put Bree in the spotlight. Yet the history of Bree's inhabitants is truly ancient. In the sources, they're referred to as middlemen, or also as
Pre-Numenoreans.
And the name is actually quite interesting when you break it down.
So, the Numenoreans were that legendary island people, blessed by the Valar with long life, who later founded Gondor and Arnor. But the ancestors of the people of Bree, they belong to the peoples who already lived in Middle-earth before the Numenoreans arrived, hence pre-Numenoreans. They themselves settled in Eriador during the Second Age, even before the kingdoms of Arnor and Gondor were founded.
These people didn't migrate to Beleriand when the Great Journeys took place. They stayed behind, living as mountain folk in the Ered Nimrais, the White Mountains, related to the Dunlendings, by the way.
So, how did they end up in Bree?
That's the interesting part. After Sauron's first defeat,
the darkness continued to spread nonetheless?
Yes, and during those dark years, with Sauron's shadow still hanging over the land, they fled northward to Eriador. Eventually, they settled on Bree Hill, and there, well, there they stayed, for thousands of years.
Thousands of years? That means when Aragorn wanders through the Prancing Pony as Strider, he's sitting in a village that's older than...
than Gondor and Arnor, yes. Those weren't founded until the year 3320 of the Second Age. By then, the Bree folk had long been living on their hill.
And in Peter Jackson's films, Bree comes across as rather gloomy and rain-soaked. Muddy streets, suspicious characters everywhere.
Jackson staged it as a contrast. The hobbits come from the idyllic Shire and suddenly find themselves in this rough world of men. A very clever dramatic choice.
But it also obscures just how significant the place actually is. Bree wasn't just a waypoint, but a true melting pot of different cultures and peoples.
Men and hobbits really did live there together, and dwarves came through regularly. What made it special? The different peoples actually got along, not just living side by side.
That's what's so fascinating. In Middle-earth, the peoples usually keep to themselves. Elves in their realms, dwarves in the mountains. But Bree was different.
And this openness. Perhaps it came precisely from the fact that Bree was never part of the great political games. No kingdom making grand claims. Just a village at a crossroads that welcomed anyone who came in peace.
A place that survived by being there for everyone. That makes it rather endearing somehow. Now it gets really interesting when we look at what this crossroads location meant politically. After the fall of Numenor, the survivors founded two great realms, Gondor in the south and Arnor in the north.
and Bree, along with its neighboring villages, joined Arnor.
Staedel, Achet, Coombe, the entire Bree land became part of the kingdom. They even gave up their own language and adopted Westron, the common speech of Middle-earth.
That shows how profound this integration was, not just politically, but culturally as well.
And it was precisely this location at the crossroads, which we described at the beginning, that made Bree, I'd say, the strategic hub par excellence. East-west and north-south met here, a logistical dream for any merchant.
When you compare that to real historical trade routes, think of the Silk Road or the Amber Road. Where paths cross, something special always emerges.
People, information, goods, everything converged there. Bree wasn't a random place, but a logical center point.
But then came the collapse of the
kingdom, yes. 861 Third Age.
A pivotal year.
Arnor breaks apart into three successor kingdoms. Arthedain in the northwest, Cardolan in the south, Rudaur in the east.
And Bree was probably located in Arthedain, though that's not entirely certain.
The great point of contention between the realms was Amon Sul, Weathertop, which we know from the films. One of the Palantiri was kept there.
The Seeing Stones. Whoever controlled a Palantir
had access to information across vast distances.
Like a medieval intelligence agency in crystal ball form, you might say.
And all three successor kingdoms wanted this advantage for themselves. Bree sat right in the middle, on the road between these warring powers.
Did the village suffer because of that?
The inhabitants probably experienced the conflicts more from a distance. They weren't directly involved in battles, but they surely felt the effects. Fewer travelers, unsafe roads, stories about the Witch King of Angmar.
Who was the leader of the Nazgul and ultimately destroyed Arnor?
But Bree survived. The kingdom fell, yet the little village at the crossroads remained.
That says a lot about the resilience of this place.
Perhaps precisely because it was never important enough to be deliberately attacked. Small enough to be overlooked, large enough to remain useful.
A survival strategy that has often worked in real history too. The small trading towns that watched empires come and go, and in the end experienced more history than many a capital city.
Bree is exactly that kind of place. A silent witness to great events.
Now we come to what truly makes Bree unique in Tolkien's world, the inhabitants themselves. Because around 1300 Third Age, no wait, that was, yes, 1300 is right, the first hobbits settled in Bree. They had crossed the Misty Mountains a few centuries earlier.
Halflings who had fled from the growing darkness in the vales of the Anduin. Some moved on to the Shire, but others stayed in Bree.
And here we see what we mentioned earlier. From then on, men and hobbits lived side by side. In the same village, on the same streets. That's unique in Middle-earth during the Third Age.
Unthinkable for elves and dwarves. They can hardly be in the same room without quarreling.
In Bree it worked. Perhaps because both peoples are so down to earth? The men there weren't lofty Numenoreans, and the hobbits had their own humility.
And the prancing pony became the center of this community. The inn even offered rooms specially designed for hobbits, with lower ceilings, smaller beds, and their own common room.
Tolkien actually drew inspiration from real English village inns. Those pubs that have served as social gathering places for centuries.
The place where all classes mingle. Merchants, farmers, travellers, and in Bree's case, different peoples as well. Over a pint, stories are told, deals are made, friendships are forged.
And speaking of stories from the Prancing Pony, In March 2941, a certain dwarf met
Gandalf. That was Thorin Oakenshield.
And that chance meeting in a tavern in Bree
was the beginning of the entire Hobbit story. Without that moment in Bree, the quest to Erebor would never have happened. No Bilbo, no ring, no... none of it.
A village inn as the trigger for world-changing events. It shows once again how Tolkien turns small places into turning points of fate.
But dwarves were no rarity in Bree. After the fall of Erebor in 2770, exiles had settled in the Blue Mountains, and they regularly travelled along the Great East Road.
Bree was on their route. They stopped in, traded, exchanged news. The village was simply open to everyone.
And the Bree hobbits themselves? They claimed they had invented pipeweed smoking.
At least they claimed so. Tobold Hornblower, the famous Old Toby, then cultivated it in the South Farthing and made it popular. Whether he brought it from Bree, no one knows for sure.
Well, that's quite a cultural export. Not weapons, not art. Pipeweed.
It fits with Tolkien's love for life's simple pleasures. Good leaf, good ale, good company.
What has always fascinated me are the names of Bree's inhabitants. They had a tradition of deriving surnames from plants and herbs.
Appledore, Goatleaf, Heathertoes, Rushlight, all names that showed their connection to the land.
And Ferny, Bill Ferny, he shows up later, but not exactly as someone you'd root for.
Even in this peaceful place, there were shady characters. But that's part of any living community.
What makes Bree so special is this normality within the extraordinary. Different peoples who simply live together, without great drama, without treaties or diplomacy, just being neighbors.
In a world full of epic conflicts between kingdoms and gods, that's almost revolutionary.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
A little Gaulish village, just without the magic potion. Simply good neighbors and a proper inn. Now we come to the night that changed everything. September 29th, 3018. Frodo, Sam, Merry and Pippin arrive at the Prancing Pony.
But they weren't the only ones with an interest in that evening. By this point, Bree had already received, well, uninvited guests.
The Nazgul had intercepted one of Saruman's spies near Tharbad. A squint-eyed Dunlending outlaw with apparently some orc blood. They intimidated him and turned him to Sauron's cause.
So the spy network reached all the way to Bree?
The enemy had planned ahead. That evening, a southerner sat in the Prancing Pony, watching the hobbits. And then there was Bill Ferny. We mentioned him earlier.
The name already came up. Unlike the other villagers with their rather harmless plant names, he had long been known for being untrustworthy.
Bill Ferny was something of a local crook who sold himself to the
highest bidder.
And in this case, that was the enemy. Ferny and the southerner watched the hobbits all evening.
In the film, this scene is incredibly atmospheric. The dark tavern, the hostile glances.
But in the book, something happens that's even more dramatic than shown in the film. Frodo accidentally puts on the One Ring in front of all the guests.
Right in the middle of the crowded tavern!
He simply vanishes. The whole room sees it. The spies see it. Ferny sees it.
That was, of course, the absolute nightmare for anyone trying to stay under the radar.
But fortunately, there was someone else in the room. A ranger, keeping to himself in a dark corner.
Strider. or as we later come to know him, Aragorn, heir of Isildur, future king of Gondor.
At that moment, though, he was simply the sinister stranger whom the hobbits initially distrusted. In the film, with his hood and glowing pipe, iconic.
The book describes him as equally menacing. The hobbits didn't know whether they could trust him.
But Strider immediately recognized the danger. The rangers had long guarded the borders of the Shire without the hobbits knowing. They kept evil at bay.
You only learn that properly much later. Generations of rangers had worked in secret to protect this region.
And now Strider took on the protection of Frodo personally. He warned the hobbits and helped them hide.
Nopp, a hobbit servant of Butterbur the innkeeper, helped disguise the beds. They placed bolsters under the covers so it would look as though the hobbits were sleeping.
And that turned out to be desperately needed.
That night, the inn was attacked. But interestingly, not by the Nazgul themselves.
The Ringwraiths had sent their human agents. Bill Ferny, the southerner, perhaps others. They broke into the rooms and stabbed the beds.
Had the hobbits been lying there?
They would have been dead. But thanks to Strider's foresight, they survived. The next morning, however, the group had to leave quickly, on foot, as their ponies had disappeared during the night.
And here Bill Ferny comes into play once more. He sold the hobbits a half-starved pony at an outrageous price.
The pony Bill. It went on to become a loyal companion of the Fellowship and had a much better life.
A little irony that the animal who came from a traitor went on to become one of the most faithful companions.
Sometimes good things come from bad sources. And Bree had proved, even in the darkest moments, there were men and hobbits who helped.
After that dramatic night, the Fellowship moved on. But for Bree, the following months became truly dark.
The Dúnedain Rangers, who had protected the region in secret for years, departed. They followed the call of their king, Aragorn.
And with that, Bree was suddenly defenseless. Only then did the people realize how dependent they had been on the Rangers.
In early 3019, Saruman's ruffians struck. Villains raided the village, causing chaos. The Great East Road became unsafe for travelers.
The townsfolk had to bar their doors early, post guards around the villages. The open crossroads became a besieged settlement.
Silence fell over the prancing pony. Hardly any guests, hardly any ale. In these dark days, Butterbur came to realize
what the rangers had actually done for them.
All those years, the Bree folk had eyed the grim strangers with suspicion. Now they finally understood.
That's so human, isn't it? You only appreciate protection once it's gone.
Butterbur is actually one of my favorite characters. This good-natured, somewhat absent-minded innkeeper who always does his best.
In the film, he's portrayed affectionately. That nervousness, forgetting Gandalf's letter.
But he stands by his village. Even in the worst times, he keeps things running.
And then comes the day that changes everything.
October 28th, 3019.
Frodo, Gandalf and the hobbits return to Bree. On their way home to the Shire.
With news! The king has returned. Aragorn sits on the throne of Gondor.
That must have seemed surreal to the Bree folk. The grim Strider from the prancing pony, now king?
And Butterbur's main hope was one thing, that a new king would leave Bree in peace.
Typical. The man has just survived everything and simply wants his normal life back.
But the return of the king did indeed mean good things. More traffic on the roads, more trade, more prosperity for the entire region.
Bri became once again what it had always been, a place of meeting.
No kings, no great heroes, just ordinary folk who held on.
And when I think back on everything we've told about Bri, this village is such a perfect example of how small places experience great history.
Humble, yet indispensable. A beacon in the darkness.
And with that, we've come to the end of our journey through this fascinating village. Thank you so much for joining us.
If Middle-earth excites you as much as it does us, why not visit battlemerchant.com? In the shop or on the blog, you'll find many more exciting topics about fantasy and history.
Until next time.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your swords sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.